So I'm Shirley, a volunteer with the Peterson's Oral History Project, and the date is the 21st of September. And would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Chris Melville, and I was the Port Health Officer on Grimsby Docks from 1982 to 2014.
Wow. And would you, I don't know whether you mind me asking, but the date of birth, your date of birth?
14th of November 1952.
And have you all always lived in Grimsby?
Or? Oh, no. I'm from Northumberland, and I worked up there for a few years, and then I went and worked in Hampshire for a few years, and then I came here in 82.
Right. Okay. So your previous work, was that docks related?
No, it was environmental health, because what people down here call port health is actually environmental health.
Environmental
health. But because I worked for the Port Health Authority, then everybody down here knew us as port health rather than environmental health.
Right, okay. So what would be a typical working day for you, if there was one?
Yeah. Well, our office was on Fishdock Road, opposite Reg Miller's, which pretty much opposite Tom Taylor's, which is the only building left standing. Mm-hmm. So we were there. I was a senior port health officer, there was a principal port health officer, and a fish inspector and a clerk. And so the fish inspector would be on the markets at 5:30 in the morning, looking for the quality of the fish that was on sale and condemning the unfit fish. So maybe once every week or fortnight, I would go down with him onto the market and go from the south down through the west, down through Doughty's, down through Mellish's. Inspecting the fish and condemning the unfit fish, and obviously just chatting to merchants and the like, very sort of social event. So that would go on till about 8:30, depending on how much fish there was. Back to the office for a cup of tea and a chat, and then out on the streets inspecting all the fish businesses.
Oh.
And if we had not condemned fish, but if we'd been unhappy about some fish, then we'd find out who bought it and go to their premises and see how they were getting on with taking out the unfit fish and using up the other fish.
Mm-hmm.
And we would also, we did a lot of exports in those days, because 82 we weren't in the EU properly. So merchants were exporting to France, Italy, Spain, Germany on a daily basis. So we'd go out to a sort of a list of premises and sign export certificates to get the fish out and about.
Mm-hmm.
Behind our office in the Royal Dock was a DFDS, so they brought in what people call the butter boats.
Yes.
Every few days, and we would check the documentation, because again, although we were partly in the EU, we weren't fully, so Denmark was not a member state as far as we were concerned. Uh-huh. So we would inspect the documentation that came with the consignments, take some samples of high risk products. And then we also got a lot of what people would call unfit meat coming from Denmark for Pedigree Pet Foods.
Oh.
Melton Mowbray, and that needed special documentation, so we'd be issuing that. So that was the sort of work, and a lot of what we did was walking the streets really.
Mm.
Because the place was a tip, and so we'd be cajoling merchants into stop smoking for a start.
Yeah.
And then, you know, tidy up the boxes, bring the fish in if it was outside in the sun, get them to clean up the premises as best we could.
Yeah.
That's sort of daily work, really. And I spent a lot of time with Youngs, because Youngs are obviously in our area, and if they accidentally put a piece of string or sticky tape or elastoplast or whatever into a food product they'd made here, and it was sold somewhere in the country, it would come back to me, and then I'd go there and discuss it with them and investigate how that had all gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So widely, and we also worked weekends. We also worked weekends because the butter boats would come in on generally Sunday, but occasionally on a Saturday.
Mm.
So that was sort of what we did.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of things I've forgotten.
It's very interesting though.
Yeah.
So the unfit fish, mm. Was that the stuff that was sent down for
fish meal? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've brought with me a tally.
Ah.
So we go out on the market with a pocket full of those. A pocket full of those, you may have that as a gift.
Thank you.
A pocket full of those, And when we came across a square of unfit fish or a box of unfit fish, we put those on the top.
Right.
And immediately we'd done that, they became our property.
Right, okay.
So yeah. It was a very informal arrangement that worked in practice.
Yeah.
So the only option, if we saw unfit fish, our formal option would have been to seize it.
Okay.
But that would involve bringing a magistrate down here.
All right.
So just over the, probably the century that my predecessors did the work, it just became a more informal arrangement where we would look at the fish, see it was unfit, tally it up, and it would become ours. And we would go down to Fishmeal, which was just round the corner there,
yeah.
Their office upstairs, and tell Norman where the fish was, and he would come straight out with a skip and load it up, get rid of it before the merchants eyed it up.
Yeah. And this would be fish that had come straight off the boat, presumably.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, yes, off the cat boats generally.
Yeah. So, what would be wrong with it to be deemed
rotten.
Unfit?
It was rotten.
Ah, even though they were using salt and ice and all that sort of thing.
Well, they weren't using salt; they were using ice.
Yeah.
No, they'd been on a long trip.
Right.
The fish was probably not very well handled. It was at the bottom of the ponds. So the other fish was getting on top and squashing it,
mm-hmm.
and because there was more fish on top, the water wasn't circulating, so it would tend to go sour.
Right.
And it, people never argued, really.
No.
It was accepted that a cat boat coming in probably would have some unfit fish on it.
Uh-huh.
And then there'd be occasional boxes on the market that would be unfit,
yeah.
simply because they'd been around the houses too long.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, I mean, I remember in Fish Dock Road, there was a consignment of dogfish. Whether it had been held up by paperwork or whatever, I don't know, but we just condemned the container without it coming off the lorry.
Yeah.
When you opened the door, you could smell it.
Yeah.
So I remember that happening. I remember Faroese consignments on the Overland Market being unfit when they arrived. And again, writing to the Faroese authorities asking
yeah.
how it could possibly have got here unfit.
Mm.
Not getting a reply.
So presumably the trawler owners wouldn't be paid for this unfit fish then, would they?
No.
No.
Nobody would be.
No.
But it was, I'm sure some merchants could have made use of it, but that was part of the relationship we had with the salesman.
Yeah.
Predominantly that they accepted that, because Charlie, the fish inspector, Charlie Molston, was very, very widely respected.
Mm.
He was a tremendous asset to us,
mm.
and really an asset to the port. And if Charlie said it was unfit, then people would know that it was unfit, because he'd had to buy fish in the past when he was a trader
yeah.
and a buyer, and so they knew that he was sympathetic mm. to the industry. But so if he said it was unfit, it was unfit, and mm. very rarely did anybody actually argue with him.
No.
Naturally, people argue because it's human nature. If you're losing thousands of pounds worth of fish, you're going to argue a bit. But generally speaking, people took it on the chin. It was quite a nice environment, really, in that
yeah.
circumstance.
Yeah, yeah. So did you have any dealings with, obviously you would in all the fish merchants and processors, you would obviously have relations
we were in
with
them every
all
day.
The time.
In them every day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And part of my job was to train student environmental health officers, because in those days our curriculum involved knowing about meat, knowing about poultry, knowing about fish to a high level.
Mm.
And so Grimsby was an easy place for students from all over the country to come
mm.
and spend a couple of days here. So I built up a training course whereby they would come on a Monday morning, they were allowed to come at 6:30, not 5:30, obviously,
mm-hmm.
to make life easier. And I would take them on the market, show them the fish, identify cod and haddock and whiting,
mm-hmm.
pollock and coaling, all that. Whether they were good, bad or indifferent, the quality, how to look for quality, how to look for freshness. Then they could have a breakfast break, and then I would go around willing merchants, showing them fish being processed. So they'd go to Keith Graham's to see fish being smoked traditionally. They'd go to premises just next to us here, Billy French, because he would always entertain them by eating cod eyes
oh.
in front of them. And he would do cheeks and tongues to show them that being done. We'd go up to Dennis Lombard at Norbert, because they had a mechanical smoker. Young's, I'd go to Young's, and they would show them fish fingers or fish cakes being
yeah.
made. And we'd also go on the laboratories, because they had some very high-tech laboratories. So that meant I was in, so from spring through to summer, and then from autumn through to winter, so avoiding school holidays, I'd have students pretty much every week.
Wow.
So that meant I was in all of those premises.
Yes.
Every day of every week.
And then they'd presumably be doing courses at the college as well.
Oh, they were at Leeds University, Manchester University.
Oh, right.
And further afield. And I was an examiner for those universities as well, so they didn't have to come here, they could go to Billingsgate if they wanted to. And so I would go to the university every year and take part in the wider food exams, which was something I had to do when I was a student. So, and that was just a key role that I had at that time.
Mm.
But as money started to run short, not our money, but the money of local authorities, then they couldn't really afford to send their students here.
Right.
So obviously they had to pay for travel, they had to pay for accommodation. Students were paying for themselves towards the end, and then the curriculum changed, so no longer became necessary.
Right.
I must have done thousands of students in my time.
Yes, yeah.
And then every year we had an exotic food course in Bradford, which I attended, so there'd be meat, poultry, halal food, vegetables and exotic fruit and vegetables from the Bradford area, and then I would take every single fish that I could. Merchants would kindly give us a cod or a haddock or a whiting or a pollock or whatever, and I would take them across, and students from all over the country would attend. About 70 or 80 students would attend, and it was a big do. So I'd teach them there for the ones who hadn't come here, or some ones who had come here. I'd meet them again, and that was a really well established course. But again, as time moved on, Bradford couldn't afford to make it quite as lavish. So it got cheaper and cheaper and simpler, and eventually Bradford Council would say, why are we doing this? It's not really our core activity. Why should our ratepayers contribute towards that? So they stopped that.
All right.
And of course we had Fish Dock Open Day.
Yeah.
So on Fish Dock Open Day, I'd get merchants to to give us perhaps a big monkfish or a tope, and then smaller fish, and I'd built a table and put ice on it, and had a marquee. And then Young's would sponsor it.
Mm-hmm.
They would sponsor like a microwave or something like that. And so we'd put the big monkfish in the middle or the big tope in the middle. We would weigh it first and then invite people to guess the weight.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And the winner would win the microwave.
Gosh.
So that went on for a few years, North Wall and on the New Market. And I also thought Lincolnshire Show.
Yeah.
Why not go there?
All right.
So again, I persuaded the council to give us accommodation in the NELC marquee. Took the table with me, took the ice with me, took the fish with me. Again, Young sponsored it. And so I gave people who came to the Lincolnshire Show the chance to see Grimsby fish.
Yes.
And to see what a cod really looked like and what a haddock really looked like. And then see a giant monkfish and see a giant tope, and really, really successful.
Yeah.
But again, we had to say, it's a great idea, but it's not really core activity for a council.
No.
So we knocked down on the head too.
Right. Yeah, that'd be quite interesting though, wouldn't it? Because when you think, if you're not near a port, you're just getting your fish from the fish and chips shop.
Oh yeah, if you're buying fish and chips, you wouldn't know what fish look like. If you're going to a supermarket, you might see fish with a skin on, but you don't often see, a whole cod or a whole haddock. You certainly wouldn't see a whole monkfish.
No.
You certainly would never see a whole tope. So, it was entertaining. And
yes.
It showed that we were, how could you put it? It showed that we were nice people supporting the industry.
Of course. Yeah. So during your time down here, were there any, do you remember any, because I'm aware that it was such a busy environment.
Oh, yeah.
And railway and all that sort of thing going on. Do you ever recall any accidents happening on the docks?
Well, people, I believe a lady of the night fell in the dock and was rescued by a lumper, foreman lumper, and I believe he got a watch for doing it.
Oh, right.
I remember somebody literally just outside the window here when this would be Doughty's, when Doughty's was fish market was trading, that's where the Icelandic container fish went. And when they reversed the trailer unit up against the wall, so they were going to load it, sticking out the front of the trailer was the chassis, and in the dark you couldn't see that, and I believe somebody riding a motorbike or a scooter ran into it. So I remember that happening. Mm. I mean, I did investigate accidents and fatal accidents, but not on the dock, because generally on the dock that would be the health and safety executive,
right?
Because it's the nature of the nature yeah. of the businesses.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned Doughty's, is that this bill?
That market there.
Oh, that market yeah. there. So big cross.
That's called George Doughty's, the one that's at right angles from Mellish's.
Right.
And then South Market and West Market.
Okay.
The Overland.
Yeah.
So yeah. on a 1982, there'd be 20,000 kit starting on at the end of Murray Street, coming down that market, down that market, down that market, and then round the corner onto Mellish's.
Wow.
And so we would start, say, at 5:30 at that end,
yeah.
and then walk round, inspecting the fish on the way around.
Mm.
And then rushing back to the office. It was winter time, so it was bloody cold.
Yes.
I don't suppose. It was all recorded, it was all documented.
Yes.
Because, you know, if we did condemn fish, then somebody somewhere wanted proof. So we would issue a condemn note to whichever company had been yeah. trying to sell the fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd go back to the office, do the condemn note, and deliver it to the salesman.
Yeah.
And then he would explain to Iceland why the fish had been condemned here. And we also got merchants ringing up during the morning saying, I bought some fish, I'm not happy with it. So it's either come off the market and I'm not happy with it, or it was sent direct, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go out and have a look at it, and if we thought it was unfit, we would condemn it. Take possession of it, get it to fish meal, issue a condemn note, and that would then give that merchant the opportunity to say to the sender, I'm not paying for that fish because it's been condemned. And again, I'm sure we must have had people from abroad saying that can't be right.
Mm.
But generally speaking, it was accepted as part of the daily work.
Mm.
Quite often we'd also, merchants would buy stuff that they didn't like, but when it came down to it, it wasn't unfit. So if the fish was soft,
right,
they couldn't fillet it, and they would say, can you condemn it? And we would have to say, well, it's not unfit, it's soft. And of course they'd go up in arms at that point and say, well, that's no good to me.
Mm.
We'd say, well, we only condemn unfit fish, we don't condemn fish that isn't unfit to eat.
Mm.
So that would, there'd be a little bit of friction there.
Mm.
A friction there. And they'd say, well, sell it to somebody who's making fish cakes. You know, so people on the fish docks were making fish cakes, and you could put it in a fish cake mix. Nothing wrong with the fish, just
yeah,
soft.
Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't be filleted. So that'd be the sort of thing that would happen quite often.
Yeah.
Or the fish would smell of cucumber.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if the fish eat certain sorts of seaweed or plankton, they smell of cucumber.
Oh.
And again, the merchants would say, oh, I can't sell that. And again, we would say, well, it's not unfit. So perhaps they would negotiate with a salesman and say, well, you know, Port Health says it's not unfit, but I can't use it. And depending on the relationship they have with the salesman, I might get their money back or
yeah.
get a lower on the next purchase they made.
Oh. Never thought about that.
Hmm?
About what the fish eat would affect the smell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, on the market, merchants would often say, oh, this is Bear Island fish, because they could just tell by looking at it where it had come from.
Oh.
Whether that was kidology or whether
yeah.
it was true, I don't know, but it always sounded very sage, what they were saying.
One of the other buildings that we're interested in is Building 89.
Yeah.
On Wardcliffe Road, Fred's Fish.
And Steve Parkinson.
Yeah. You don't know what it was before Fred's
no.
Fish? No.
No.
Because we're trying to find a bit of history about that building.
Yeah. Well, I spoke to Steve on Friday, or on Saturday, when he was down there.
Mm.
So I think he's going to come and talk to
me.
He
is, yes.
He might jog my memory. He might jog my memory, because I spent a lot of time in and out of Steve's premises, so I can visualise the back of it, where he used to cook his crabs and cod roe. I can visualise the front. I've got photographs of the front of the street and slides, but they probably were at the time when Steve was there, so it was still Safe Fred's Fisheries on the front, but it might have had another name on. Quite possibly not, because a lot of merchants did share premises.
Yeah.
Because I could talk, you know, I can go back to when the whole street was full of merchants. The bank, there was a bank on the corner.
There was a bank on that street as well.
Bank on the corner, corner building. There was a bank. If you look close.
Oh, was that the corner nearest to the tower?
Corner of Fish Dock Road. Warncliffe Road was the bank, with Norman Slater upstairs, the fish salesman. So if you look carefully, you might see the front door looks better quality than the rest.
Mm.
So, like, for instance, Lloyd's Bank's just next door but one, isn't it? I think there were three banks in this street, and then the post office at the bottom.
Yes.
Which was Atkinson's Smoked Fish House, eventually. Which, again, if you look at that building, you'll see that it, you see it was a post office.
Mm.
So, yeah, but, you know, that saying to anybody today, I mean, I can remember it only go back to 1982, but anybody coming down today would not have the slightest idea what the fish docks looked like at that time.
No.
Pretty much every single building occupied. You know, the ice factory in operation, the police station, the back of ABP, British Transport Police did the docks, the customs house on the flyover full of customs officers, seven banks that I can think of, the post office, cafes, public toilets.
And more buildings than there are now, because some have already gone, haven't they?
The whole of Murray Street, which also they knocked down, the bungalows next to the roundabout. All the prestigious buildings next to where the security are now, the sort of insurance businesses. Where TC's Club was an insurance company. On the north wall there was a compass adjuster. There were map makers. Garages up there, you know, you have your car fixed up on the north wall.
Yeah.
And then say every single business occupied, just a hustling, bustling, Coast Salt, of course, still being there, the net makers, Middleton's operating in the street, DFDS in the Royal Dock, with all the trunkers there, the pontoon, of course, which was massive. We spent a lot of time in the pontoon, at the bottom of Warncliffe Road, up where the fish market is now.
Mm.
So yeah, wholly different. Beyond your imagination, what it looked like in 82.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was other businesses related, wasn't there? Like the rope makers.
The rope makers, Middleton's doing the nets.
That sort of thing.
Coresalt doing everything they did.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've got Tom Taylor, obviously, still there. Reg Miller, who was a competitor to Tom Taylor just down the street. I remember him selling clog irons. Having them hanging in the window. Obviously all the cafes, Salisbury's Cafe, Jubilee Cafe. The fish meal company, of course. The ice factory, of course. Cafe down there. We sold clothes as well. So, yeah, lots of supporting industries really that went along. And then the box companies, but then they weren't on the dock estate in my day.
The Railway Street box company down there, was there? Making boxes.
In my day we had cardboard boxes.
Oh.
You know, fish to be sent away. We had the 10-stone boxes, the exchange boxes, trunks, which was on the market. They'd be washed at the box washing plant towards the north wall. We got some wooden boxes, but they came from Norway, I think. And we started to get polystyrenes coming from Iceland, and that was a nightmare because they just got piled up and then blown around and broken up, and so there's polystyrene everywhere. So in my time I don't think we had anybody making boxes on the dock, because we also covered Ryby Street. So although Port Health Authority was the port, this side and west side Royal Dock, for convenience we did Ryby Street as well. So we started at the top with Mac Fisheries, and then come down the street, both sides. So where the gym is now, that was the Boston Deep Sea Fishing Company. We'd go in there and sign export certificates. So we did that street as well, because it was all predominantly fish businesses.
It was a lot of work to do, because you didn't have a big workforce, did you?
No, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. I mean, we had to prosecute people occasionally, because they'd gone beyond the pale. Almost everything we did, almost every single day, was by cooperation. As I said, Charlie, the fish inspector, everybody liked Charlie. Everybody liked Charlie. He'd started off on a fishing boat once, couldn't hack it, you know, did labouring, then filleting, and then buying, then supervising, then managing. So people knew.
Had the experience.
Charlie knew, and he was so charming and pleasant and friendly and cheerful. So he was, like I said earlier on, he was a tremendous asset to us in that my side of things, I was a bit more detached from their perspective because I'd come from away, and I was also an officer, whereas Charlie was one of them. And as I said, because he'd been through the mill with having to buy and sell stuff he may not have liked much, then they respected his opinion. Not saying he didn't have arguments, of course he did, but almost everything we did was by consent.
Yeah.
Sometimes a bit more willing than others. But when it got beyond what was reasonable, then we would prosecute. And it did mean, it's like any prosecution that an environmental health officer makes in a town. If you prosecute a butcher, for instance, all the other butchers read it in the paper and they step up to the mark. So in the same way, if you said to merchants day after day, week after week, month after month, can you clean your business up, please? Send them a letter. And then eventually we prosecute somebody who just had gone a step too far. Then they would realise that ultimately we could do something about it. And of course it would mean they'd be in the paper. And the thing about Grimsby merchants is that their customers are not here. Their customers are elsewhere in the country. So if it's in the paper, the customer doesn't hear about it.
No.
Whereas here, you know, if we prosecuted a local butcher, for instance, it'd be in the paper. And people would say, I'm not going there ever again. Whereas if you're in Manchester or Birmingham or Leeds and you buy your fish from Grimsby, you're not going to read a local paper. So you're not going to know that your supplier has been prosecuted. So
no.
It didn't have the same effect necessarily. What I also failed to mention was the vans. Because, of course, Grimsby has a huge cohort of fish vans selling fish all over the country.
Yes.
So when I came here in 82, we had a scheme. There was an organisation called the Grimsby Mobile Fish Retailers Association, better known as GMFRA, and their office was in Grant's Buildings on the corner of Wharncliffe Road. And the chappie who ran it was called Gordon Green. And he was a van lad. And somehow or other, they had arranged with my predecessors to set up a scheme whereby we awarded a sticker every year. And so they would bring their fish van to Fish Dock Road and we'd inspect it. And if it was better than the law required, they'd get their sticker. And it would say, Grimsby Port Health Authority, this van's been inspected by Grimsby Port Health Authority, found to be, you know, whatever. And it had a crest on it and it had a date on it. And merchants would come, van lads would come, every January and say, can I have my new sticker please? And that was a predecessor to what you see nowadays, you know, scores on the doors, where you have 1, 2, 3, 4,
yes,
five in the window.
Yeah.
So 1982, and I didn't invent it, it was there before I started, Grimsby Port Health had scores on the doors in well before 1982.
That's good, yeah.
So we get 70 or 80 vans coming to the door, January, February, saying, please can I have my sticker? And again, and they would say, customers, wherever they were selling in the country, customers would look at the sticker and say, wow, that's good, you're obviously... And apparently colleagues elsewhere in the country who would inspect a van while it was selling in the street, apparently would walk up, see the sticker and walk away. So, don't need to inspect, it's been done by a colleague.
Yeah.
And they found it to be all right, so why waste my time? So, again. And then latterly I did some work for the FMA and wrote a code of practice for the vans. So all the vans can, if they want, have a code of practice on how to run hygienically and safely.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good.
Well, again, you can have a copy of that if you want.
Oh, that would be very interesting. Yes. Yes, please. Just as I'm finishing off, working here all that time, you know, and I've asked everybody this, do you actually like fish?
Yeah.
Do you eat fish?
I don't eat as much as I should.
Right.
You know, in the day, like in 1982, you could have as much fish as you wanted. Merchants would say, you know, when you, even if you did an inspection, even if you found stuff wrong, the merchant would say, do you want a parcel? And from my perspective, having worked in cities, you don't do that, because that's bribery.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas down here, everybody said, don't worry, it's not an issue. They're not trying to gain any favour at all.
No.
If there's that much fish about, it's a courtesy.
Yeah.
You want it, you want it. If you don't, you don't. So,
yeah.
But latterly, no, I don't eat anywhere near as much fish as I should, really.
No.
But the options for buying it are getting thinner and thinner, really, as you go to a supermarket.
Yeah. Well, it's been so interesting.
Thank you.
Listening to you and finding out about another aspect of the of the port.
Yeah.
You know,
so you've got the sticker. Well, you've got the tally.
Yes.
I found this because when I finished work, I took away all the documents that I knew would get binned. So you can copy this if you want to. So this is more relevant to Fred's Fisheries.
Ah.
So down here on the docks, with one or two exceptions, so that would be Grimsby Shellfish, who cook crabs, and Ivan James White, who did hot smoked mackerel. Pretty much every other business sold raw fish.
Mm-hmm.
So, Grimsby Shellfish, that was cooked crabs, and Ivan James White, hot smoked mackerel, was ready to eat. So every merchant down here was selling raw fish, and therefore the risks of food poisoning were negligible, because the consumer would be cooking the fish. And in the event of there being pathogens on the fish, they would kill them by cooking them. So that was a reassurance. And you would hear from merchants from time to time, if they were defending themselves, they would say, well, fish never killed anybody.
Right.
Which is true, probably. Well, a lot of fish are selling Grimsby. However, in the spring, traditional merchants would be offered cod roe on the market, which they would cook. And so 99% of the year they were doing raw fish with a negligible risk to food safety. But for a couple of weeks they'd be cooking cod roe, which was going to be eaten by people direct. And therefore, if they contaminated the cod roe after they'd cooked it or didn't cook it properly, person eating it could be poison. So, and that would include Steve Parkinson, because he did cod roe cooking in the back. So what I did was I wrote a guidance document in 1993, which said, So without exception, fish products generated in Grimsby are raw and subject to further treatment. Doesn't mean you don't have to comply with the law, but it means the risk of food poisoning is slight. However, cod roe is cooked, and in consequence, any contamination will be carried on to the consumer. And if they don't heat the product sufficiently, food poisoning will result. And then I said, it's not my intention to stop you doing this, but you must do it more carefully and more planned than you would normally do. So I said, all cooking equipment had to be clean and sanitized with a sterilant, like Detox.
Mm-hmm.
All working surfaces had to be in good condition and sanitized. The cod roe had to be kept separate from the raw fish, and transported separately and packed separately. Staff who were in a cook roast had to wash their hands. Cooking had to be done inside the premises and not outside in the street. And the cooker and the processing had to be done away from any other raw filleting and offal. And this is how kind we were, how thoughtful. In view of the limited time available and the seasonal nature, I don't expect you to see structural amendments, but I will expect to see you carrying out it in a more organisational and structural manner with better standards of hygiene. And I wanted to draw a parallel with the butcher who might cook ham or haslet. Because what I needed merchants to understand was that they might turn their nose up at a butcher who didn't cook stuff properly or wash their hands properly. Why was fish any different? And that was always an uphill struggle. They never saw fish as being on a par with meat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
And what we did have, 1992 was very relevant because in 1992 we had the first piece of European law that came out of Brussels, which required every single business here to up their standards significantly. So I had to visit every single fish premises on the docks, which was about 200 in a day, and give them a list of work if necessary. I mean, Young's didn't get a list of work, or Bird's Eye didn't, because they were in compliance. But pretty much every other merchant had to put in door curtains, change the hand washing equipment, clad the walls, and they all had to get an approval number. So, you know, if you look at a piece of meat, a sausage, sausages or yogurt or cheese, you will find an oval with a number in it.
Yes.
And that tells the EU where it was produced. And so every single business down here got that number from me, and that will be recorded and then sent down to Department of Health. And so 1992 was the start of upping the standards here, which again, merchants pretty much took on the chin, really. So smokehouses, which had wooden horses for keeping the fish on, had to change to stainless steel. The steel banjos they put the fish on had to be changed to stainless steel. So they had door curtains everywhere, cladding everywhere. It was pretty big stuff in its day. And that came out the back of it.
Did we deal with shellfish here?
No.
No.
The odd person did. I mean, J. Van Smeren on Warncliffe Road, they did. So they're two or three doors away from Fred's Fisheries. And then they moved down to the corner there, corner of Cross Street and Hutton Road. They were there for a while, J. Van Smeren. But we had a business at Birchin Way briefly, cooking stuff. But we would require that to be done really carefully. So it's not that sort of port, really.
No.
I mean, you know, like Peterson's, for instance, which you're interested in. Peterson's did kippers, but we didn't. You know, Grimsey's not really a kipper port anymore.
No.
You know, it was called Haddock, but not really kipper. So he was pretty much unique in his day. I think some people on Rabbit Street might have had a stab at it. And then Ivan, have you got Ivan James White on your list? Because he owned Peterson's for a while.
I'm not sure.
He'd be worth talking to.
Yeah.
Because he had a business in Rabbit Street and then he took Peterson's over.
Right.
For a close.
Okay, and that was who? Ivan?
Ivan James White. So his second name's hyphenated. J-A-I-N-E-S hyphen White.
James.
And he's big in fish training and the like. He did have a training school on the village for Tesco's.
Oh, right.
So, on the presumption he's still around and about, he'd be worth talking to.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he's willing.
Okay.
And he's a very personable chap.
I'll pass that on to Catherine.
Yeah.
Well, it's been really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you for
spending the time to come and talk to us.
My pleasure. And you know how to find me if you need anything more.
Yes, I think Catherine's got your details.
Yeah.
Yeah.